Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. We're here today to share the latest on health and healing. We begin with a study from Chung-Ang University in Korea, and it's about blueberries. Now, whether it's regular organic blueberries or wild blueberries, I would always prefer the wild blueberries. Why? Because according to this study, if you have a blueberry drink, you just take a quart of blueberries and juice them. Or take a blender and throw them all into a blender. And that would be terrific because it helps keep stress under control. Yes. Now, why this happens, I'll get to, but the antioxidant power within the blueberry is able to improve our cognitive performance, and at least in this case, in the laboratory. This was done at the Department of Food and Nutrition at Chung-Ang University in Korea. And just imagine this. Stress-induced cognitive impairment is everywhere. Why? Because stress releases hormones. And some of those hormones are meant to protect us and save us, the fight-or-flight response, cortisol being one of the most important. However, that's only supposed to last maybe a minute or two. What happens when you feel stressed all day, or at a particular time of day, or a particular time of the evening, or when you're talking with someone, whether at work or at home or family? And generally it's the things we cannot control in that moment that really upset us. And a lot of people almost, well, they don't want to overact. They don't want to seem like they're overwhelmed. So they suppress what they feel. That's not good. And then they kind of overcompensate. They may overeat or drink or take drugs or get really negative. All of that ends up having a negative effect upon your hippocampal neurogenesis, and that result from an increased oxidative stress. So if you're putting a lot of stress in your body, you're creating a lot of free radicals. Free radicals then damage the genes. The genes that are damaged and not repaired or cleaned out and renewed, then it starts a whole disease process that can lead to from cancer to diabetes, from heart disease to arthritis. You see where this is going. So when you take, in this case for 8 weeks in the laboratory, and you take blueberries, a drink, a blueberry, just juice it or blend it, it can make an enormous difference on turning off these psychological issues or turning them down. So you bring that anxiety down. Now, that's just one thing. There are other things that can help as well. Hypnotherapy can help. Acupuncture can help. Anything that is non-invasive that can help with chronic psychological stress will help extend our lives. And blueberries is just one. Now, from Deakin University in Australia, they have a study about the omega-3 fatty acids and how they lower your homocysteine levels, but the B vitamins enhance the effect. Now, this was a randomized controlled trial, and it supports the ability to lower homocysteine, especially when you take your omega-3 fatty acids and a B complex at the same time. And this is based upon a meta-analysis. Now, why? Because you've heard me mention on many occasions there are three nutrients that really stand out in lowering this very dangerous homocysteine, a marker of inflammation that can cause heart attacks and strokes when it's elevated. Folic acid, vitamin B6, vitamin B12, and vitamin C. They work synergistically together to lower homocysteine. But what happens when you take an aspirin to thin your blood? Maybe you are susceptible to having a stroke or you've had a stroke. Well, they're going to give you an aspirin as one of the many medications. It will thin the blood, but it also destroys folic acid, B6, B12, and vitamin C, therefore making your body more susceptible to elevated homocysteine and also a heart attack, because these help prevent that. So thinning the blood you can do with, well, how about celery and cucumber juice? Throw in some lemon, and you get a great blood thinner. How about some vitamin C and coenzyme Q10? Thin the blood also. Why don't they ever tell us that? This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrition Research. So again, we want you to have healthy, thinner blood. Remember, the blood carries oxygen. The blood carries nutrients to all the cells of the body. And when you're on a sedentary lifestyle where you're not really exercising and pumping muscles, so you're getting the blood to flow through all the different systems in the body, capillary systems, the brain, and the extremities, that's dangerous. Because if you're sitting, especially if you cross your legs, never cross your legs when you're sitting. So here is the takeaway message. You want to exercise to stimulate healthy blood flow. You want to stay away from all the trans fats and saturated fats, the heavy carbohydrates that are always processed, lots of sugar, because that thickens the blood. You don't want thick blood. You want a thinner blood, healthy blood. You want a lot of oxygenation of that tissue. Vitamin E, tocotrienol, vitamin C does that. And then omega-3 fatty acids and B-complex help lower by huge improvement, 40% for just those things. So let's prevent heart attack and stroke by doing the right thing. There was also an article in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition indicating that high-dose vitamin B, let's say 50 milligrams, B1, B2, and B6, and also, let's say, 500 to 1 milligram of B12 and folic acid can help slow brain wasting, or what is called atrophy. And that's generally found in people with mild cognitive impairment by 40%, but only when omega-3 levels were already high. So make sure you're taking your B-complex and your omega-3 fatty acids together. Now, from the University of Barcelona, a study about listening to music during pregnancy benefits the baby's brain's ability to encode speech sounds. What this says exactly is this. When pregnant women sing to their babies or listen to music on speakers during their pregnancy, babies are born with a better ability for neuronal encoding of speech sounds. This is one of the main conclusions of a study that was led by the head of the Brain Lab Research Group on Cognitive Science at the Faculty of Psychology at the University of Barcelona and the Institutes of Neurosciences. So, very important study. It was published in Developmental Science. All this science to support what we've known for a long time. Rubbing your belly and singing to your developing child helps. If you can't sing, then put on some soothing music, and that also helps. Specific stimuli in the brain that will help them develop language sooner. Something simple, all right? Daily musical exposure during the last weeks of pregnancy is associated with an improved encoding of low-frequency sound compounds, which could improve the newborn's perception of the tone. Just something simple. Now, from Yale School of Public Health comes a study where people who think positively about aging are more likely to recover their memory. A Yale School of Public Health study has found that older persons with mild cognitive impairment, that's a common type of memory loss, were 30% more likely to regain normal cognition if they had taken in positive beliefs about aging from their culture compared to those who, they have a negative belief about aging. Around the world, and I've traveled around the world seeking answers to why people live a longer life, even if they don't have their Pilates and yoga and jogging and their their get up and get on your bike and stationary bike and pedal to the music or the coach. These people have none of this. Yet they're living a longer life. Why? Because they're living a happier life. Yes, that was my conclusion after traveling for, not constantly, but throughout a 5-year period and interviewing thousands of people, understanding their culture, how they lived a day in a life. And they're very connected to being present for that day. And we are not as inclined to do that. We have a very different feeling about aging. We are an ageist society. You know, the only ads you see generally for people who are older are ads for something to help alleviate their pain, not cure them of anything and not prevent anything. Just if it's urinary incontinence, if it's arthritis, if it's some form of dementia, is some form of, you know, buy this little tag so you can squeeze it and when you fall down and someone will come and help rescue you, which is fine. Nothing wrong with that. In fact, that saved lives, and I would support that. But our perception of aging is just not healthy. And mind you, I say that not as just an indifferent layperson. I was senior research fellow at the Institute of Applied Biology for 36 years. That's more than most people's entire work life. And that's where I found that the happier the person, the longer they live, if all other things are equal. Now, of course, you can be happy and then end up in crisis and nutrient deficient. It's not a guarantee, but if you start with that, you have a really good foundation. And that's what I found. Everywhere in the world, when I ask them, how important is a person as they get older? Oh, very important. Yes, very important. Oh, they're there. How to deal with different issues in life. Here in the United States, there is no accurate survey that I could find, but to the best that I could find, probably half of all people over the age of 50 are lonely. They don't have a really strong network of friendships and relationships that can help them share the best moments, be there for some of the worst moments. And that's really important. But that's where family comes in, and that's where the nuclear family comes in, and that's where traditional values are shared throughout the whole planet come in. All, unfortunately, are under attack now as being not woke enough. We don't need moms and dads and brothers and sisters. Don't even use the word. It sends me into trauma. By the way, I'll show you the law on that in an upcoming episode where one of the best lawyers on this in California is saying that you cannot compel by law, because then it's considered compelled speech. You must say this or we will take your job as a school teacher or an employer. No, the law is on your side. Compelled speech is illegal. And it goes against the Proposal 9 in California. But they've been firing people, and they've been bringing them up on charges if a student says, but the teacher didn't, you know, use the pronoun I demand. Well, you can demand all you want. Compelled speech, you'll get a lesson in the legal consequence of that on an upcoming show. In any case, think of the difference of growing up where everyone in your life is still important to your life. They're part of your life and will be to you pass. And the older you get, the more respected you are. There's a certain reverence for those who've been where we haven't yet, if we're younger, experienced things that they experienced long ago and have a different perspective than we do now facing these challenges. That's why family is important. And trying to eliminate words like mother, father, brother, sister, man, woman, wow. Look at how far we've gone down that rabbit hole, but we're pushing back and we should say no to anything. Don't stay silent when it can impact you. In any case, I've studied aging my entire career, written on it, textbooks or books on it, and documentaries, now doing clinical studies. And that's what I'm finding. And it's very important that we pay attention to what we take into our body that can cause us to age prematurely. And if we say that the thought in my brain that I'm using now is I'm not going to worry about if I get some gray hair or wrinkles or if I'm not the same as I was 20 years ago, but what can I do to try to maintain what I have, even improve on it, even reverse my aging, and that there's a lot we can do. And this Yale study simply underlines with exclamation marks, yeah, memory loss is one of the worst things that can happen to a person because they can't remember what they've forgotten. So you can be talking to them and they'll say the same thing five times over an hour and not remember the previous four they've said. And when you say, but you keep saying the same thing. No, I don't. I've got ways you can help people with dementia or memory loss. I'll get to those on an upcoming webinar on rebooting your brain. That's all we have today on our health and nutrition segment. We're going to take a break and come back, have some really interesting insights, some original insights that you haven't heard before. Please stay with us. And welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. What are the five signs that a civilization is about to collapse? Let's take a look at this short film. It's only 6 minutes long. And be aware, I believe that what has taken hundreds of years with some civilizations could be happening now, in part, over the next 24 to 36 months in the United States and Great Britain and the Western Allied countries.
Scholars have studied the question of why civilizations end for a very long time. They have compared hundreds of civilizations from the Aksumite Empire to the Qin Dynasty, looking for similarities between all of them. They do this with the hopes of learning how to apply these comparisons to the challenges faced by modern civilizations. Not surprisingly, when they look at the numerous empires and dynasties that have risen and fallen over the past 5,000 or 6,000 years, a pattern emerges. So here are the top five symptoms historians observe prior to the collapse of a civilization. Climate change. You might be surprised to learn that climate change isn't a new threat to people and civilizations. When climatic stability changes, the results can be disastrous, resulting in crop failure, starvation, and desertification. The collapse of the Anasazi, the Tiwanaku civilization, the Akkadians, the Mayans, the Roman Empire, and many others have all coincided with abrupt climatic changes, usually droughts, and the obvious impacts on food production. In this context, climate change refers to changes that have no obvious connection to choices made by these people. In essence, it happened to them. While similar, the second symptom has a unique twist. Environmental degradation. When societies overshoot the capacity of their environment, excessive deforestation, water pollution, soil degradation, and the loss of biodiversity, they eventually lose their ability to fend off the consequences of damage they made to the environment. So in this context, environmental degradation happens because of them and the short-sighted choices they made. The next symptom scholars always see prior to the collapse of a civilization is inequality and oligarchy. Historian Sir John Bagot Glubb describes it as the age of decadence in his book, Fate of Empires. Honestly, I'm just going to let him tell you what the final stages of a civilization look like. Now remember, this was written nearly half a century ago. Frivolity, aestheticism, hedonism, cynicism, pessimism, narcissism, consumerism, materialism, nihilism, fatalism, fanatics, and other negative behaviors and attitudes suffuse the population. Politics is increasingly corrupt, life increasingly unjust, a cabal of insiders accrues wealth and power at the expense of the citizens, fostering a fatal opposition of interests between haves and have-nots. The majority lives for bread and circuses. They worship celebrities and throw off social and moral restraints, shirk duties, but insist on entitlements. The next symptom of a declining empire may seem a little strange at first. Complexity. Joseph Tainter, a noted collapse expert and historian, has proposed that civilizations eventually collapse under the weight of their own accumulated complexity and bureaucracy. Societies are essentially a way for a group of people to solve problems. Their methods for solving problems grow in complexity in order to overcome new issues. The problem is that the complexity eventually reaches a point of diminishing returns. After this stage, collapse will eventually become inevitable. Have you ever had the feeling that things related to law or finance are shockingly complex and difficult to understand? Well, this is an example. Another method of describing increasing complexity is called energy return on investment, or EROI. This describes the ratio between the amount of energy produced by a resource relative to the energy needed to obtain it. EROI also appears to have a point of diminishing returns. Writer Thomas Homer Dixon observed in his book, The Upside of Down, the environmental degradation throughout the Roman Empire led to falling EROI from their staple energy source, crops of wheat and alfalfa. This is likely one of the burdens leading to the collapse of the Roman Empire. If these things haven't led to the collapse of a society up to this point, this final item is the proverbial straw that breaks the camel's back. The last item on the list is external shocks. These are things like war, natural disasters, famine, and pandemics. The Aztec Empire, for example, was brought to an end by Spanish invaders. Most early agrarian societies were short-lived due to deadly epidemics. The concentration of humans and cattle in walled settlements with poor hygiene made disease outbreaks unavoidable and devastating. The reason different civilizations collapse seldom follows the same path, but usually they begin to fail because of the convergence of many factors. The combined burden is like a combination of hits from a boxer on his opponent. While the first few hits may not bring the other fighter down, the combined effect of the unrelenting blows results in their collapse. What do you think? Do you see this list of pressures occurring simultaneously in any modern civilizations?
And now I'm going to ask you to listen and watch. You can watch the upcoming film clips, and you should. They're very informative. Just go to prn.live, scroll down to shows, then scroll down to Gary Nall, and you can watch it there in real time. What are in the Pfizer documents? Now remember, we're supposed to, from the very beginning, all this is going to be transparent. All the research and the results to show that it's safe and effective. This we were guaranteed from the President of the United States and everyone in the media. Everyone. Well, turned out all to be lies. Everything they told you was a lie. And it was a lie, not just misinformation with no malintent. There was an intent to deceive. How do we know that? What's the proof? Last evening, I was given a call. Alex Bernstein is going to be on Tucker Carlson talking about his lawsuit against the FDA. So I tuned in, and he's a journalist, used to work for the New York Times, and I'm not familiar with his work, so I'm not making any claim that he's good or not good on anything, but he has had some opinions about COVID, and he's been pretty accurate on those claims, so good for him. But then he was censored on Facebook and on Twitter, and he sued the FDA. Again, good for him. I support that. And so that was not thrown out. So there's a possibility that it'll go to trial. But before it goes to trial, it goes to what is called discovery. And that's where you nail your opponent in discovery. And here's what he said. I'm paraphrasing if it's not exact, that he said, Tucker, if we win this, you know, if I win this lawsuit, then I'll have something that is really important. I'll have discovery of all the information about what really was going on, you know, with the safety and efficacy studies. Okay. And Tucker said, good. Here's the reality. And I believe that he may not be aware of this. So someone may want to pass this on to him in the two following clips. We already have that information. We already have discovery. We have all the documents, every single one. How many documents? It's probably in the millions, but initially it's hundreds of thousands. Now, why is this important? Because while we were being told that everything is cool, it's safe, it's effective, and if you doubt that, you're a conspiracy theorist and you should be canceled and criticized. And indeed, Don Lemon and other people of his ilk and his temperament went after people, really saying very toxic things. And think of all the people who chose. Maybe you had an autoimmune condition. You chose not to be vaccinated because an autoimmune condition was something that can cause autoimmunity. Remember I told you that? I told you that repeatedly at the beginning. Make sure that if you have an autoimmune condition, that you look carefully at the evidence so that you don't have autoimmune on top of autoimmune. I use the example, you don't want a five-alarm fire that's in your body now with arthritis, for example, and then have another five-alarm fire created in your body. It could kill you. Well, that is actually what has happened. So what I warned you about is now shown to be 100% correct. So, did the FDA say, of course, you know, here are all the records? Because everything that the manufacturer does, they had to get approval through the FDA because of what is known as the Emergency Authorization Act. So they didn't have to prove something. They just had to show that the evidence was compelling enough to go forward because there was this pandemic worldwide. All right. So then when the FDA was sued and to turn over documents, it refused to. It wanted 75 years. Shouldn't that have been a big red flag? What do you mean 75 years? Every person on television right now talking about COVID will be dead. Now, why would it take 75 years? Well, it wouldn't. And so they were compelled, forced by law. So right immediately, there should have been congressional investigations in the FDA, who was on the panels, who said yes to waiting 75 years before the people knew the truth. And of course, by 75 years, nobody would care. They would have all forgotten about that. I mean, we forget stuff that was just a week old. Well, then Naomi Wolf, who has been one of the leaders for the last 35 years of the feminist movement, mainly on women's health issues, and she's been done a noble job, and I really commend her and have a lot of respect for her. And she's appeared on this program many times talking about these issues. Well, guess what? She just happens to be in a place where she gets this information, what to do with it. She gets 2,500 people with backgrounds in the sciences to work together. Then she gets a person in to help her organize it all. So there, and then they have different categories that when information comes in, all these people, it turns out to be worldwide, 3,500 people all working together. And these are people that are looking for the truth. They have no politics involved in this, no money involved in this. And lo and behold, they come up with evidence that Pfizer knew from the beginning that this wouldn't stop the spread of COVID. They knew from the beginning that it would cause heart attacks and strokes and especially kill younger people. Wow. So we have that evidence. And then the Morrises on Redacted, good people making some really good insights, and I support them, they have a woman on that's going to be the second person you're going to hear from, who is a medical journalist with a tremendous background. And she got separately from them, she has documents showing it's even worse than that. She has the original research documents that they tried to hide from the world, and she has analyzed them and with scientists and physicians, and it really is bad. Both of them claim it's the biggest health scandal in world history, and it's a crime against humanity. I tell you this why, because there's still people, including in this audience, including on Pacifica's boards and journalists who believe, well, no, this is all nonsense, you know, get your vaccines. Anyone at this point advocating someone to get the vaccine, especially younger persons getting vaccine, do you realize that there's far more likelihood that person will get sick and die and have a heart condition that will kill them if they exercise than COVID would, which their body can easily fight off? If you don't know what you're talking about, think well about the confirmatory bias that you're confirming that they should get their vaccine. See, I got my vaccine, you should get your vaccines. What if you're wrong? Do you ever engage in scholarship, or you're just engaged in hysterical, politicized, weaponized rants? Let's go to these two clips, because this confirms without politics, without ranting, that we have abundant evidence that everything you were told is a lie, and that now, I said, you're going to see more lawsuits right now for the next 2 to 3 years against everyone involved, and I hope including media. I hope the Daily Beast and other people are also included. If you made the mistake of attacking people, it's one thing to say, get your vaccines, we believe it'll work. That's fine. That doesn't deserve any litigation. You just made a mistake, an innocent mistake. That happens. That's forgivable. It's not forgivable when you have the skills and resources to find the truth and you choose not to find the truth, but rather align yourself with the status quo. And that's where discovery opens everything up. And that's where people should be held accountable. Let's go to the clips, because this is once and for all going to show you that everything you were told was a lie and the people should be held accountable. And I believe there are going to be hundreds of millions of people involved in these class action lawsuits. And good, these people need to spend the rest of their life in prison.
But I know what's in the Pfizer documents, because something kind of miraculous in the history of intellectual inquiry happened to me and to the world as a result, and it's the following. Some of you may know that a lawyer named Aaron Seary pursued a lawsuit against the FDA to release the internal documents that Pfizer created as part of its rollout of its mRNA injection. And these are internal documents showing what happened when people were injected with this material, and also the experiments that led up to it internally. And thank God for the judge in that lawsuit, because the FDA asked that judge to keep these documents hidden for 75 years, right until long after we are all gone. Exactly. And the judge said no. And so the documents were released. So I read this, thank you so much. And as a journalist, I was concerned, because I knew that journalists are not equipped to, as lay people, to understand the technical language in the documents. And I also knew that Pfizer was releasing 55,000 documents a month. And even that is a bit deceptive, because these are documents that each of them can be 10,000 pages long, right? So a massive tranche of data, and that ordinary journalists, it was going to go into the memory hole unless we found specialized readers to read through, analyze, and interpret, and boil down into manageable reports, thank you so much, what was in the Pfizer documents. So I went on War Room, which is another great irony of this moment. I went on War Room, which is, you know, one of these great ironies of this moment, that Steve Bannon and I have this, you know, interlocutory platform where he listens to what I have to say, which is a miracle, because I got deplatformed a year and a half ago for doing what I've done for 35 years, which is reporting on women's reproductive and sexual health. In June of 2021, I reported on the fact that women were experiencing menstrual symptoms subsequent to receiving an mRNA injection. I'm a feminist. I've been a feminist forever. My first book was published when I was 26. And it is not unusual for me to call attention to symptoms that women are having that are red flags. Anyone who knows eighth grade biology can tell if women are having menstrual symptoms, there are going to be other bad things happening down the road. And sure enough, Twitter deplatformed me for this obvious observation. And I was also smeared globally. And it turns out another lawsuit subsequently found that it was the White House, the CDC, possibly DHS, and Twitter all unlawfully colluding to deplatform and smear me for making this observation about women's health. Yeah, but fast forward, I was talking on War Room about the release of these documents, and I called for experts to help us read through them, and miraculously, 2,500 experts responded to this call, right? Yes, yes. But the story is not over because I was ill-equipped to manage them. And so we had physicians, we had RNs, we had biostatisticians, medical fraud investigators, lab clinicians, research scientists, cardiologists, pathologists, anesthesiologists, some of the most distinguished scientists and medical people imaginable. But it's virtually impossible to manage 2,500 experts around the world, especially, you know, if you don't have this background, wading through 55,000 documents a month. So again, the reason I tell this story is I really feel like something metaphysically beautiful is happening, even in the middle of something metaphysically hideous. And that is this tiny woman, Amy Kelly, this tiny doll-like woman, and I stress her tiny doll-like appearance because it's so stereotypical, but she's such a force of nature, right, belying those stereotypes. She offered to be our project manager. She stepped right in, and she just calmed the storm. And she organized these 2,500 experts, immediately 3,500 experts around the world, into six working groups with a committee at the head of each who were busy churning out reports based on these primary source documents so that they could tell the world using the highest level of analysis possible, but broken down into language that everyone could understand, what was in the Pfizer documents. So this is just stunning to me that this happened. So now there are 58 reports, and now is the sad part of what I have to tell you. The Pfizer documents contain evidence of the greatest crime against humanity in the history of our species. And I'm so sorry to have to walk you through this, but there's no way around it. We just have to go through, and the beauty of Hillsdale is that you all are tough and like truth. And so with truth, we can prevail, but it's painful. Some of the things that came to light, just some headlines. Pfizer knew, for instance, 1 month after rollout, so that's November of 2020, that the vaccines didn't work to stop COVID. Indeed, in the Pfizer documents, a month after rollout, and this is marketing, post-marketing, so it's out there, the spokesmodels are telling you to do it, the ads are in social media, you know, the ads are on television. A month after rollout, Pfizer's internal documents identify that the vaccines have vaccine failure and failure of efficacy, and they identify that the third most common side effect of the Pfizer vaccine is COVID. The second headline, which is stunning, is that within a month or two, Pfizer was getting so many reports of adverse events, meaning bad things happening to people who had been injected, that they understood that they needed to hire 2,400 full-time staffers in order simply to process the paperwork of the adverse events that they were receiving reports of, as well as to prepare for the flood of adverse events that they knew they would get in the near future. Pfizer knew in May of 2021 that the vaccines had caused heart damage in 35 minors within a week after the injection. And Pfizer knew, right? You've got to understand that all of these documents say FDA confidential at the bottom of them, right? Pfizer and the FDA shared these documents. And the FDA knew that 35 minors sustained heart damage. But the government of the United States, and I'm embarrassed to say I voted for these people, didn't tell parents until August of 2021 that there was an elevated risk of heart damage in healthy young adults. 4 months later, and in those 4 months, what did the young adults of America receive? A constant battering with propaganda on social media, on television, in news outlets, bought up by money in the CARES Act, as well as from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, with like influencers showing off their injection site, saying, you know, we can do this together, we can be strong, do it for grandma, all of this aimed at young adults. They did not tell the young adults, the healthy young adults of the United States, your generation, that this was elevating a risk of heart damage, till 4 months later. You may recall that the CDC said that the materials of the injection stay in the injection site. And the materials are lipid nanoparticles. They are mRNA, and the lipid nanoparticles are an industrial fat, which is covered in polyethylene glycol, which is a petroleum byproduct, right? And spike protein. Well, the CDC said it stays in the injection site. And then it says, and I remember asking doctors, like, relatives who are doctors and were funded by NIH grants, where does the spike protein go? And they were like, you know, when you're a journalist, you've got an ear for nonsense. They were like, well, your body metabolizes it, you know, or, well, you'll digest it and excrete it. And it's like they had no evidence to give me to show me the basis for their response. But in fact, that's not what happens to these materials. And Pfizer knew that. These materials biodistribute, this is Pfizer's language, throughout your body in 48 hours. And where do they settle? Well, lipid nanoparticles are designed to cross every membrane in the human body. They've known this for 10 years. So where do these ingredients go? They go to the brain. Some of you have noticed changes in the personalities of loved ones who have taken these injections. They biodistribute to the liver, the adrenals, the spleen, and if you're a woman, they accumulate in your ovaries. Now, these are industrial fats coated with polyethylene glycol in your ovaries, okay? And what's really scary, Dr. Robert Chandler, who's a respected pathologist who's treated the Lakers and the Angels, he wrote this report, and he shows that the chart shows the graph going down as it leaves the injection site, but going up as it accumulates in these various organs over time. And what's incredibly scary if you're a woman is that there's no mechanism that we've found by which the body gets rid of the lipid nanoparticles in the ovaries. So your first injection, some go into your ovaries. Your second injection, more go into your ovaries. Your booster, more go into your ovaries. There's no mechanism with which the body can release this material that we've seen.
The details that you're able to go into make my head spin. There's so much details of these tests and lab results that you've been verifying and checking and corroborating with different experts on. It's just mind-blowing. So perhaps before we get into the new stuff here, in your next investigation, can you just give us a recap on what you uncovered and sort of set the stage for what you discovered in your first report?
Yes, I will. So just to recap, the European Medicines Agency and other regulators were very concerned. This is towards the end of November 2020. They were concerned about the quality of the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine. And what they had observed was a drop in the RNA integrity level of the commercial batches of the vaccine. And the reason why there was a drop was because there was a presence of truncated, which means fragmented, modified mRNA molecules in the vaccine. And so they were essentially not intact, which was very alarming because they didn't know the safety or efficacy implications because of these truncated species that were present. So they granted authorization, conditional marketing authorization. This is the EMA, the European Medicines Agency, on the basis that the marketing authorization holder, which is BioNTech, do further testing of their product to prove its fidelity and to show that only the spike protein was being expressed by the modified vaccinal mRNA, and also that their product was consistent across batches. They also wanted BioNTech to further investigate and characterize these truncated fragmented mRNA species. And so that's sort of where my report sort of goes into and looking at the tests that they did. So they submitted to the FDA a Western blot that it looks very automated, sort of computer generated.
And a blot and, test, just to be clear, it's like the black dots on a spectrum.
What a Western blot does, it actually it detects specific proteins. And that's what they were looking for. They wanted to show that it was a spike protein at coming out at an expected molecular weight. So the scandal here, it's not just that they looked unusual. Of course, you can say they're just computer generated and that's why they look like that. But an anonymous expert provided to me key evidence with videos and a diagram showing he used computer software analysis, image software analysis, and was able to show, this is prima facie, that literally BioNTech and Pfizer copied and pasted certain groups of bands across four different vaccine batches, transfected at six different concentrations. And the odds of that happening by chance is literally impossible. You know, so they've been copied and pasted here. And I looked further into this, and also they produced a Western blot they submitted to the EMA, the European Medicines Agency. And these blots look very different. They're very thick, black bands, very homogeneous looking. And I thought what I'll compare it with Protein Simples technology, which is a technology used to produce these automated Western blots. And this is apparently the same technology they use, because this was in a Pfizer-funded paper by Patel et al., which they specified the technology. And I looked at the product brochure of this company that makes these, and it looks very different. You can still see a smeared effect. There's like a gradient. It's not all homogeneous. So each band looks slightly different. So, you know, the BioNTech's ones look, they look very unusual. It looks like, and I spoke to an expert here. I spoke to Kevin McKernan, who is the who's R&D lead on the Human Genome Project. He's a world-renowned genomic scientist. And he had a look at the data and said, look, this data is unusable. He suspects what they've done, they've literally upped the gain. They've manipulated the saturation levels. This is via the computer. And it looks like they're hiding dirty bands, he said. So you've got one thick band, but in that thick one sort of band, there could be multiple bands that have been hidden because they've manipulated with the visuals.
Because I love photography and as a hobbyist. So when you're amping up something like that, that saturation, you're basically bleeding. And I almost imagine like you've got a few, like your kids, you know, they've drawn something on, you know, like with watercolors. And then they just like would pour a whole bunch of the paint on top of the little bands that they drew. So it oversaturates it and it hides those initial lines that your child drew. So by amping up the gain, amping up the saturation, they're hiding something with this. What would they be hiding? What did he say about that?
They're hiding sort of different proteins that could be present other than the spike protein coming at different molecular weights.
And now that you've seen the evidence, you've heard it, it's there. It's not a matter of controversy. It's not a matter of contention. It's not a matter of debate. The evidence is overwhelming that everything you were told is a lie from the get-go, and yet they're still promoting this. There's still schools and colleges till this moment are still demanding this, and lives have been lost because people were afraid of losing their job. I'd like to hear what you think on these issues. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. We're going to take a break and come back, and hopefully you'll have a chance to share your views on all this. And again, do not condemn people. Do not challenge them if they've gotten the vaccines. We want to approach this with integrity and decency and realize if someone has gotten the vaccine, if they have not yet found symptoms, they should not breathe easy, because we're finding now that a lot of these symptoms will take years to manifest, and it's going to be a rough road for everyone who got the vaccine. In fact, we're going to play a little clip from one person who's done more research on this than anyone else on the planet, and he's got accurate information, and he's going to share, and I think it's a minute and a half or 2 minute clip, how many Americans have died, how many have been injured, and how many have been permanently injured. The numbers are staggering, almost unbelievable. 26 million injured, 1,360,000 permanent, and 300,000 dead Americans. Let someone show that he is wrong, because he's basing it upon insurance actuaries for young people, working people, people who aren't dying unless they have some comorbidity. And he argues that no challenge that they give can meet what he said is that all this happened in 2021 and 2022 when the vaccines occurred, a 40% increase over all normal deaths, including normal COVID deaths. We've had nothing in our history that does this any better than him. And he also showed it applies the same. The country's got the most vaccines, and people got the most individual vaccines have the highest unexpected death. So we're going to go to a break, come back with your calls. If we have no calls, we're going to go directly to Dowd's clip on this. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. We do have a call up. Let's go to Los Angeles, where Patrick is standing by. Hi, Patrick. It's your turn. Share your thoughts, please.
Hi, Gary. How are you doing?
Great, thank you.
I just wanted to call in today because it is the 9th anniversary of Michael Rupert's passing, and I want to thank you for enabling him to have his show on your network. And through his show, I was able to get connected to you. And I can't thank you enough for what you've done and especially you've been able to do these last 3 years to help me through an extremely hard time out here in Los Angeles. But I've been able to so far avoid all the madness that is being pushed upon us.
Good for you. Tomorrow, I'm going to do a program on the philosophy of life. And this philosophy of life concept, you'll see brought together hundreds of different strings of thought as to why we have the problem, what the problem is really about, who's responsible, including our own action or inaction, or action with the thought we were doing something right and noble and good, and it was based upon faulty information, so people then ended up causing a compounding injury to their psyche and to the soul of our country, which is now balkanized into tribes. This is a terrible place to be, but it will not be reversed. What we will do, when you hear tomorrow's program, we begin the process of repurposing our life from this day forward. Los Angeles is not the place to be. There are places we cannot change, because we cannot change at this time, I underline at this time, the body politic, where the entire state is but one party, and it's corrupt from top to bottom. And the citizens have acquiesced responsibility for the changes unless it personally interferes with them, then they leave. So that will be addressed tomorrow. And yes, Rupert and I were close friends, and his death was a surprise. But before he died, he gave a lot of good information out, and he was a fighter. He was courageous. Thank you for your call, Patrick, and listen tomorrow as well, all right? Now, we're out of time for WBAI, so we're going to say goodbye to WBAI. And remember, for all of the people in this audience, let's help WBAI. Let's become a BAI buddy, pledging a little bit of money each month, whatever we can afford, and that will help it. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950 for WBAI. We're going to continue taking your calls to the top of the hour, and I'm going to ask at 888-874-4888, do we have anyone else on the line at this moment?
No more calls right now, Gary.
Okay, we're not at this moment. Then let's go to Edward Dowd on the cause unknown, the epidemic of sudden deaths. And he makes an emphatic statement. He said the cause of all these unusual deaths are, especially in younger people, is from the vaccines, period, end stop. Let's hear what he has to say.
Professor claims deaths due to COVID-19 immunizations now outnumber those among the unvaccinated.
There was an event in 2021 that is really, for me, one of the smoking guns. 40,000 millennials died excessively, ages 25 to 44. In 2021, 60,000, 50% increase. I knew early on a couple things that made me, let's call it, vaccine hesitant for this vaccine. It was new novel technology. The animal studies weren't good. I knew that before the vaccine was even out. I was horrified with the propaganda campaign, and then I realized something else was afoot. And listening to the radio ads on TV, they were saying it's been approved by Pfizer. It hadn't been yet. It had been authorized under an EUA, but they were saying it was approved. These types of little details really just shocked me. We were powerless to convince people of what we knew because they thought we were the crazy ones. Once you started following the money, you realize what was going on. They suppressed early treatment talk, then they suppressed vaccination talk.
A lot of things here need to be unpacked. There's real criminal behavior here because lives were definitely lost because we couldn't have these conversations.
What we believe, unfortunately, is that the immune system of many people has been compromised. And the number that we came up with in our report, 26.3 million vaccine injured, 1.36 million disabled, and 300,000 dead. In 2022, Pfizer made $7.1 billion and Moderna made $4.4 billion in the U.S. So for every $1 that Pfizer and Moderna made, it cost the U.S. economy $13. I'm very suspicious that this is a control system. And what we see now economically is the beginning of what I call the end of the current fiat system, and something else will emerge.
Government's running out of money. The government's printing massive amount of money to new surveillance going, and now we're seeing bank failures, crypto failing, all pushing people to something that has massive surveillance, which is a CBDC.
People don't realize the globe is bankrupt and there's going to be a mad dash for tax revenues, and that's why they're going after crypto right now. They need to squash it. They have to be able to figure out a way to get their vigorous or their take.
You have been censored. You probably never set out to be a public figure, but you are now. What's it like being you?
I truly believe every great evil creates a great good, and we've just seen a great evil. And I do think there's a renaissance coming. As much as things are messed up, life goes on, and you have to enjoy it while you can. So I'm trying to make a difference, but I give the results over to God. So I do what I can, and if all my work results in nothing, well, that's okay, but I tried.
He tried. He's a courageous person. Mind you, he used to run one of BlackRock's whole funds, I think $24 billion under his supervision. We're inviting him on the program for a full hour to discuss what I see is a dual problem. The problem is our entire society has been controlled by credit. But don't use the word credit, use the word debt. And as a result, corporations, including the small banks, the large banks, and all governmental agencies, is all based upon debt. And as long as those who are creating the debt are not responsible for repaying it, then who do they put in the small hairs? They put us in it. And that's why you're going to see major banks collapsing, and only those that are selected will stay afloat. And that's because if the dollar it loses its power, the entire economy collapses overnight. But that is going to be happening not because what we're doing in the United States. We're doing nothing right financially in the United States. It's what's happening with the BRICS nations, because they're working cooperatively together to create a more prosperous and safe future for the nations that work with them. That does not suggest that in any way, shape, or form am I abrogating the criticism that I have against China, which I've made clear on multiple occasions with the organ harvesting of the Falun Gong, the imprisonment, re-indoctrination, education camps of the Uyghurs, and the suppression of people, keeping on a credit score. So if you don't do the right thing, you get on a bus, a plane, a train, go to into a restaurant, you'll be shamed, everyone's cell phone will ring, and there you will be, and it'll tell your indiscretion. That kind of mind control and punishment over a period of time conditions people into almost a Stockholm syndrome, where you accept the privations you've been given and don't consider the options. So we're going to discuss everything happening and what to do to get ahead of it, because can we survive this? Yes, but only with a positive mindset and looking honestly at the problem and how we are part of the problem. If you can't understand how you're part of the problem, you'll never be a part of the solution. You'll stay frozen like a deer in the headlights, and then it's too late. But all that will be discussed on tomorrow's program and the upcoming Progressive Commentary Hour with Ed Dowd. We've given you a lot of facts, all accurate. We stand behind ours. They can't stand behind theirs. They want to hide them for 75 years from you. They lie. Every word out of the mouth is a lie. Say no to them and yes to the truth wherever you find it. I'm Gary Nall. I want to thank you all for listening. Now stay tuned for Utrecht's Lead. Have a nice day, everyone.